Western New York race fans, it's time to crank it up.
Start your engines!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host,
let's go out there and have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
Good morning, race fans. 11:03 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. And welcome to another edition of WGR's Fast Track. I'm Dave Buchanan. Thanks for listening, as always. Another great show lined up for you on this Sunday morning here in Western New York. And another great race day. Lots of excellent racing on TV this afternoon as we've got the NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Series in Martinsville at the Paperclip, the half-mile famed oval there in Virginia. And we've got IndyCar in action today as, for the first time ever, IndyCar travels to Austin, Texas in Circuit of the Americas, the COTA race circuit down there. They've got a race this afternoon at 1 o'clock. We also have lots of other great things to talk about this morning. NHRA is off to a great start. They're three races into the books, and they're off this weekend before heading to Las Vegas next week for the first of the two four-wide events of the 2019 season. And we're going to kind of break down the first three races of the NHRA season with Jake Sundstrom from National Dragster and NHRA.com. Jake's going to check in with us in about 11 minutes or so and get his thoughts after the first three races of the year. NHRA in Gainesville, Florida last weekend for the famed Gator Nationals, the 50th edition of the Gator Nationals. And they, again, will be in Las Vegas not next weekend, but the first weekend in April for the four-wide race there in Vegas. Also, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we had a caller educate us last week about some motorcycle racing, a topic we don't usually cover here on the program, but just, we are more than open to bring some attention to it because it has a local connection. As last weekend was the Daytona, or 2 weeks ago was the Daytona 200 for the superbikes there at Daytona, and the race was won by Kyle Wyman of Rochester, and one of the biggest superbike races of the year, and he picked up the win in impressive fashion with an exciting four-lap dash to the finish. And Kyle is actually going to be on the show with us this week. He's going to join us at 11:35 after the caller last week, Chris, kind of brought it to our attention. Some quick social media communications, and we've got Kyle lined up to talk with us here this morning on the program to kind of talk a little bit more about his career in motorcycle racing and talk about this big win he had at Daytona a couple weeks back in the Daytona 200. And I went back and watched the end of the race, and it was a pretty thrilling finish as they had a red flag with four laps to go, and it wound up being about a 5-6 bike battle right to the checkered flag there on the road course Daytona. Pretty thrilling event and a huge win for Kyle, the biggest of his career. And again, the young man is from the Rochester area, so he's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. As always, though, phone lines are open for you this morning, 803-0551, 888-550-2550. We also have Twitter at FastTrack550, and you can also reach us through Facebook, facebook.com/WGRFastTrack. As NASCAR in Martinsville today, the first short track race of the 2019 season. It'll be nice just to not worry about, you know, spacers, tapered spacers and aero packages, and just racing, man. Just 500 laps at Martinsville today. Good old short track, and looking forward to today's race and just hoping for some exciting racing, because we've struggled to find some at times this year. It's not been all bad. You know, we've had some good finishes. You know, the Logano Keselowski finish at Las Vegas stands out, obviously. But we've had some mixed results this year, obviously, with the new package and teams still dialing into that. And also, you know, just the competition maybe was a little hyped up too much at the start of the season by some people talking about the package, and maybe expectations were a little too high for some people, and that why it's been a bit of a downer to start the season. But today, don't have to worry about any of that. Just good old-fashioned short track racing in Martinsville today, and Joey Logano on the pole, the defending series champion, with already one win in his pocket here in 2019. As I mentioned, in Las Vegas, he'll be on the pole today. Eric Almirola will join him in row number one. Almirola off to a good start once again this year with Stuart Haas Racing in his second season in the 10 car. Row two, it'll be Brad Keselowski and Kevin Harvick. Row three was supposed to be Denny Hamlin and William Byron. However, the cars were going through post-qualifying inspection this morning. The cars qualified after the truck race yesterday afternoon down there at Martinsville, but they had inspection this morning, and the 24 car actually failed inspection. So he had to forfeit his time, and Byron will drop to the rear of the field for today's race after qualifying sixth there in the 24 car for Hendrick Motorsports. Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott qualified seventh and eighth. Top 10 starters rounding out by Martin Truex Jr. and Daniel Suarez, who is also off to a semi-decent start in the 41 car. As he, in his first full season with Truex Racing, he qualifies 10th. You got Clint Bowyer and Jimmy Johnson, no stranger to victory lane at Martinsville. He would love to get his season kickstarted today with a win for the 48 team as he rolls off 12th. Chris Buescher continues his nice little start to the season. He is qualified 13th for today's race for JTG Doherty Racing, alongside Kyle Busch, who won the truck race yesterday, and of course is fresh off his win last week at Fontana, and he finally, well not finally, but he got that win number 200 that we talked about last week. Obviously not 200 cup wins, we talked about this last week, but just for those that haven't been paying attention, Kyle Busch getting NASCAR National Crew win 200 last week at Fontana, and then he got race win 201 yesterday in the Truck Series race there at Martinsville. So he will look for his second weekend sweep of the season, and I think his third weekend where he's won two races going back to back in 1 week. And I think he had one other weekend where he won two out of the three, and then he had the sweep earlier this year too. So career win 201 yesterday for Kyle Busch. Other notable names in the starting lineup, Ryan Preece qualifying 16th in his first cup start at Martinsville, Alex Bowman 17th, Ryan Blaney 18th, Eric Jones and Kurt Busch 19th and 20th, and that'll about do it. The RCR car struggling qualifying with Daniel Hemric in 29th and Austin Dillon back there in 30th. So again, just today's race, just looking for a good change of pace, a good palate cleanser after the first five races, and you know, not have to worry about close competition because there will be plenty of it there on the paperclip at Martinsville. And I mean, you look at the standings to start the year, not a whole lot of surprises, and really and I'm sure we'll be talking more about this, but still the playoff positions, it's not going to take much to kind of get this field of 16 locked in, I think, this year, the way the standings are already starting to shape up, barring some out of nowhere wins at some point this year during the regular season. It's going to be hard for guys already outside of the top 16 to point their way into a playoff spot just based on the already level of talent that are locked into those positions. But it is a long regular season to say the least. And we'll see how it continues to play out. But you got Kyle Busch leading the standings as he's already off to a two wins this season and four top fives. And he's got a top 10 in all five races so far here in 2019 over Joey Logano. Kevin Harvick, third in points, only driver inside the top five without a win. But we know how talented Harvick is, and he continues to have a strong start. Four top 10s out of the first five races. Denny Hamlin, your Daytona 500 winner in fourth, and then Brad Keselowski there rounding out the top five here early on in the season. Then you've got Eric Almirola, Martin Truex, Kyle Larson, Kurt Busch, and Ryan Blaney rounding out your top 10 in the points currently. And I will say I'm happy for Kurt Busch. Four top 10s here in the first five races in that one car. You know, he's been with Stuart Haas and had some good runs, and then Stuart Haas, a top-level team, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen when Kurt made the switch from Stuart Haas over to the Ganassi team, as while Kyle Larson has done well for Ganassi, that one team hasn't had the performances in recent years compared as well as the 42 car, but Kurt is right there with Kyle Larson in the standings, and he's actually, you know, had a better track record this season based on top fives and top tens. Kyle only has two top tens, whereas Kurt has, as I said, the four top tens and a pair of top fives under his belt this year. So Kurt is off to a comparable performance as his teammate, what I think is a great sign for the Chip Ganassi team with two top level drivers in Busch and Larson. So that race comes up at 2 o'clock this afternoon from Martinsville, Virginia, one of the most iconic facilities on the circuit, and definitely on my maybe tops on my list of tracks I would love to visit on the Cup Series. I've been to Daytona, so I don't have to worry about that on my bucket list. I've been in the Daytona 500, so I think Martinsville really is the number one track on my list that I would love to go see a NASCAR race at, just ahead of Bristol, I think. Bristol, for obvious reasons, is maybe lost a little importance in recent years with the competition, but I still love to just go and be in that experience of being inside the half mile there at Bristol. But I think I really would love to go to Martinsville, especially that race in October at the end of the season that's always filled with drama. I think that'd be number one on my list of races I'd want to see on the NASCAR schedule, just ahead of Bristol, and then maybe maybe Darlington would be third on that list. I don't know if I should put more thought into it. Also, we've got IndyCar today at COTA at the Circuit of the Americas. There's a facility I'd love to go check out, especially go stand in that huge tower that rises above the track. Someone had some awesome video on social media during one of the practice sessions this weekend from IndyCar, and just what a view from standing atop that massive tower there at COTA, at Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas, where Formula One has run the U.S. Grand Prix here for the last couple of years, and now for the first time, IndyCar will race there. And I think I saw earlier this weekend, it's the first time since 2006, I believe, where IndyCar and Formula One will race at the same facility in the same season. But it'll be Will Power for Penske Racing on the pole for the race, Alexander Rossi alongside him in the front row. Then you got Ryan Hunter-Reay third, and then you got your first two of three rookies. Well, three inside the top 10, four in the top 11. You got Colton Herta, who has been off to a tremendous start for Harding Racing with George Steinbrenner IV, also the co-owner. Then you got Felix Rosenqvist that we've talked about from Sweden, driving for Chip Ganassi this year. He qualified fifth. Then you got Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, who won the opener in St. Pete. Then you got Patricio Award making just his second career IndyCar start. Award driving for Harding Racing, the reigning Indy Lights champion, which is the major feeder series for IndyCar for development drivers. He made his debut in IndyCar last year in the last race of the year at Sonoma, California, and he is with Harding Racing this year. He's making his first of, I believe, 13 races this year, including the Indianapolis 500, but an impressive qualifying effort for him in eighth. Zach Veach, Graham Rahal round out the top 10, and then you've got rookie Santonio Ferrucci rounding out qualifying 11th for today's race. James Hinchcliffe back in 15th. The other rookie in the field, Marcus Ericsson, Hinch's teammate is 16th today. Sebastian Bourdais 17th. Marco Andretti back there in 20th. Simon Pagenaud back in 22nd. Tony Kanaan will start last in the 24 car field today for Circuit of the Americas. But it should be a thrilling event. That's coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon on NBC Sports today for the NTC IndyCar series. That'll be on NBC Sports Network. But excited to see them at a new facility. Right now, though, let's go to the Wester Hotline, and let's go from road courses to straight line racing, as let's bring in from National Dragster, Jake Sundstrom is on the line. Jake, good morning. It's Dave Buchanan here in Buffalo. Great to talk to you.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Doing well. And Jake, I'll tell you what, it feels like just yesterday these guys were racing at Pomona. It's hard to believe we're already three races into the NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing season.
Yeah, now 1/8 of the way through, and now stuff starts to actually kind of matter when you start looking at, you know, numbers and standings for, I mean, I guess everybody except for the pro stock motorcycle category, which just got its start in Gainesville.
Let's go through the big three, the three major national divisions, and let's start with Funny Car. And man, Robert Height, what a start to his season. He's got three number one qualifiers, two wins, and a trip to a semifinals. He and his John Force Racing team, they're off to a phenomenal start this year. What's been what's been some of the secret to their success here out of the box?
Jimmy Prock, and also Jimmy Prock. if there was any concern that Austin Prock getting into a top-field dragster was going to distract his dad from his tuning duties, those have gone out the window in pretty short fashion. I mean, it's not just the round wins, right? He's 10-1, three number one qualifiers. It's like the numbers that go along with them. I think there's always been some kind of concern that as the quicker you go, obviously you start worrying about consistency, right? The Jimmy Prock method versus the Ron Tobler method, who tunes for Ron Capps. And that just has not been the case for this Auto Club Chevy during this this stretch of the season. Not only have they been much, much quicker than everybody else, they've been extremely consistent. Right now, to take a Philly Bean line, there's Robert Height, 50 feet of crap, and then there's basically everybody else. The good news, not for Robert Height so much, but for everybody else, is that it's way too early for it to really, really matter for anything other than bragging rights.
And, of course, you've got his teammate and team owner, John Force, there. 69 years of age, and the guy still got it. Fourth in points, and, you know, I'm just glad he hasn't really blown anything up this year compared to how he started last year. But it's amazing John can still pull this off at his age.
Yeah, well, you know, a big boost for him this year is bringing on the team that helped out Courtney Force last year, you know, so Brian Corradi in that contingent. And so what I really think that does for John, you know, John's going to be John no matter what, right? Once you've been doing this in any sport for as long as you've been doing it, you're pretty much going to do what you're going to do. But what Brian Corradi brings, I think, is brings up the floor for that team. What I mean by that is they're just going to be a more consistent team. I still think the ceiling for that team, you know, I don't really think that John's going to be a contender for a championship at the end of the year, but I do think that that's a team that could pick up, you know, at the very least, you know, finally get that milestone victory out of the way and pick up a win here or there. But, yeah, bringing Brian Corradi on board, I think if he was a guy that maybe we was a little bit underrated when he was with Antoine Brown's team, you know, a couple of years ago, I think that is no longer a thing.
Well, let's move over to Top Fuel and a little more parity, I guess you could say. Three different winners through the first three national events of the year. Doug Kalita leading the point standings after Steve Torrance kind of stomped on the division last year. What's been the major story this year in Top Fuel so far?
You know, I think really what's been interesting is that we found out, you know, that while Steve Torrance obviously blew everyone's doors off last year, I think a big part of that is that, you know, he also had a little bit of good fortune to go with it. And that doesn't take anything away from what Steve Torrance did. It's just that, listen, in especially our line of auto racing, luck is such a huge factor in what you do here. You know, you can go line by line through all of Steve's wins last year and be like, hey, man, in the semifinal, he probably shouldn't have won that race. And there is no recovery, right? It's not a 400-lap race where, you know, listen, I was in Fontana for Kyle Busch's win last week. He gets hit with a pit penalty, and it doesn't really matter because the guy is so good that he can come back and do it again. If Steve Torrance, you know, blows the tires off at 60 feet, that's it. The race is over. So I think that's kind of what you're seeing here. I'm not buying into the idea that there's something wrong with Steve Torrance's team. The big indicator is that Billy Torrance's dad is a guy that's won one of those three races. It's 5-1 in the two races that he's been to. It's the number one qualifier. So, you know, I think, you know, the big story in Top Fuel is that basically anybody with a good enough stuff can win on Sunday. Steve Torrance is still the guy to beat, you know, by the time we're going to get to Indy and certainly by the time we get back to Pomona at the end of the year.
I love the Torrance crew, partially because they got the Laganas, you know, Bobby and Dom Lagana, because Bobby always brings his Nitro Funny Car here to my home track, Lancaster Dragway, and they always put on some great show passes here with their Nitro Funny Cars every year. So I like to see those Lagana boys have some success with the Torrance crew.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are, I think, inarguably the coolest guys in drag racing this side of Dom Perdomo. It's not a contest, and I'd gladly argue down anybody who wants to come at me with that.
How about TJ Zizzo last week at the Gator Nationals, a volunteer crew, an underfunded team, but number one qualifier last week, had a good run. It was a real good story last week there in Gainesville.
It's really funny. Last year in Chicago, which is his, you know, hometown or whatever, his home track, they had this big dog and pony show about how, you know, we're going to run fewer races and really conserve stuff, and that was going to be our plan. And then they decided to show up to the Gator Nationals. They're like, you know what, never mind. We're just going to run more stuff and just kind of have some fun with this. And that was a great story. First of all, that's classic drag racer stuff, right? It's like, you know, maybe we'll save our money this year. And then in there, invariably the next year, they come out and waste some more money with us. But it was great, you know. They really figured out how to run that car, and I think a big part of it is just you've got to figure out how to run inside of your box. Jim Dunn is a guy that has done that for years, who has never really had as much money as anybody else, but has managed to be successful with it. And you know, TJ is just one of the really great guys out here. You know, if you've ever had a chance to talk to him, he's a, you know, really nice guy, and you know, that was a really badass looking dragster. And it was great to see them have some success. And those are people, obviously, that fans always latch on to. And I don't really know what their plan is. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really think they know what their plan is going forward. You know, they'll run Chicago, obviously. But I think it was really cool, especially to see them do it at an event that means as much as Gainesville does.
I think I've heard a similar story in any level of racing I've covered, Jake, where, you know, people say they're going to cut back and they wind up spending more money the following season. I've heard that. That's not the first time I've heard that story in other kinds of motorsports. Jake Sudstrom from National Dragster joining us here at WGR's Fast Track. Let's wrap up here with Pro Stock. Bo Butner has got wins in two of the first three races, and of course, they'll be in Vegas in a couple of weeks, but then the Pro Stock category gets some time off because of this reduced schedule this year. What are your thoughts on Pro Stock this season and the shorter schedule they're running?
Well, so Pro Stock in general, I think, you know, that category is really interesting because so much of it depends, at least from a floor level, on the kind of equipment you have. And I think you're really seeing that with a guy like Bo Butner, who really is not, you know, in my opinion, anyway, a top five driver necessarily, but really has some of the best stuff, right? You know, you're seeing that, again, also because he's driving for KB Racing, just for some clarity there. And you're seeing it on the other side with Elite, which is really, you know, right there on nipping at their heels, where somebody like Erica, who is probably the best driver in the business, right there with Jet Coughlin Jr., who has had a little bit of bad luck with the equipment. So it's going to be very close all year, especially with this shortened schedule. And I think that's going to make things a little bit more interesting from a fan perspective. And I think that that's going to be frustrating at times, I think, for the people working on the cars. I think the drivers are going to be happy about it because that means, you know, less time at the track, and, you know, especially because in our sport, where they're not necessarily quote-unquote professional drivers, they're drivers who also go and do other things. I think that's part of the reason you saw this happen. There's a reason Tanner Gray is not racing with us this year. That was not really something that he was interested in doing. He's a guy that wants to drive, you know, 52 weekends a year, not 18 weekends a year, right? So, I think it's going to be interesting. I think that, like, right now, Greg Anderson, who is a guy that has won many championships with us, is not in the countdown. You're going to see people that you expect to see in the countdown not make the countdown. And whether that is a good thing or a bad thing is really irrelevant. It is an interesting thing, and that will make my job a lot easier as far as writing about the series. That's going to frustrate a lot of people. It's going to be good news for somebody. Kenny Delco right now is in a countdown spot. Kenny Delco won the Gator Nationals long before I was born, so that's really interesting.
Jake, thank you. Last thing, of course, Pro Mod got their start last week at Gainesville, and we're huge Pro Mod fans here in Western New York because we have a great tradition of Pro Modified races, including the reigning world champion Mike Janis, who's from right here at our home track, Lancaster. And although we went out in the first round last weekend at Gainesville, loved the Pro Mod category. It was so great to see Mike win the championship last season.
Yeah, Todd Tuttero finally getting an NHRA Pro Mod win was pretty amazing. I don't know what Pro Mod fans wanted more, if it was to see Ricky Smith win after switching, you know, to Turbo, or if it was very much not to see Ricky Smith win after winning in Turbo. But getting a first time winner, you know, I mean, obviously Todd has proven himself in so many different, you know, disciplines of Pro Mod, I guess, if you will. That's not like he needed this to say, like, oh, man, this guy's good. But, man, that was Pro Mod in Gainesville is so amazing just because the air is so good. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of great racing and obviously a pretty wild crash with Mike Castellana. It's going to be that's going to be a great, great series all year long.
Jake, great stuff. What do you got coming up here on the second off week over there at NHRA.com and National Dragster? What can race fans look forward to seeing from you here leading up to Las Vegas?
Well, in the latest issue, we've got a big profile on Jack Beckman, who I assume that a lot of people are familiar with, a funny car driver for Don Schumacher Racing on NHRA.com right now. You can read a pretty great profile by my buddy Kevin McKenna on Justin Lamb, who is, I guess, young. Yeah, he's in his 20s. A really incredible sportsman racer, so you should check that out. And we're going to have some more stuff on NHRA.com leading up to the 4 Wide in Las Vegas. And if you have not had a chance to check that out, I would do that. I know obviously we've been doing that for a while in Charlotte, but you cannot beat it in Vegas.
Yeah, that I was talking before we had you on. I was talking about, you know, NASCAR events I'd love to go see, and Martinsville is probably tops on my list. If I had to put auto racing events I want to see a bucket list, one of the 4 Wide events is high up there. It looks so cool. I know some of the drivers aren't fond of it still, but that'd be something to see a national event in person. I've yet to do that, but especially the 4 Wides. That's number one on my bucket list.
So what I always tell people is, hey, man, listen, I don't have to get in the car, so it's still good for me.
Great stuff. Jake, thank you for the time, especially getting up early out there out west. Really appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of the season. Hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
All right. Appreciate you, brother. Have a good one.
You too. Jake Sundstrom from NHRA.com and National Dragster. You can follow him at NHRA Sundstrom on Twitter for more information. And I just wanted to give the NHRA some love here this morning on the program as they're off to a good three-race start here to their 2019 season. Again, Vegas coming up the first weekend of April, the first of the two four-wide events, followed up by their trip to Charlotte and Z-Max Dragway for the other four-wide nationals event there on the 2019 schedule. We come back. We'll go from when we started talking about old paper clips and ovals, then road courses, then we went straight line racing. Now we're going to take two wheels off. We're going to talk two-wheel racing, motorcycle racing with Daytona 200 winner Kyle Wyman. We get back here on Fast Track on WGR.
Hey, this is Joey Logano, driver of the number 22 Shell Penzo Ford, and you're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
11:33 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. I can barely hear it, Mike. I don't know. Is this what I think this is? Okay, I got to do the headbang.
Yep.
Okay, the Hardy Boys. They're in Buffalo today for the WWE house show today at KeyBank Center. Yes, I'll be there. It's
me too.
It's a guilty pleasure, I guess you could say. 11:33 here in WGR's Fast Track. I don't know. That just took me off my train of thought that I was going to talk about to open up this segment. But great to talk some drag racing with Jake Sundstrom from National Dragster. Again, follow him on Twitter at NHRA Sundstrom. Again, we've got NASCAR in Martinsville today coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon on Fox. And you've got IndyCar at COTA, Circuit of the Americas, at 1 o'clock this afternoon on NBC Sports Network. So that'll give you something to get ready for. UB, as both of their teams are in action tonight with round two of the NCAA tournament for both the men and the women. The men's game is on ESPN 1520, and the women's game is on 1400 AM. And, Mike, what's the FM frequency again? What, I think it's 103.7. Yes, he's giving me the thumbs up. He's trying to get Kyle Wyman on the phone for me. 103.7 FM and 1400 AM for the women's game today as they take on UConn. That'll be huge if they could pull an upset there today. Today there in the NCAA tournament. So you got some racing here early on in the afternoon, and then you can cap off with the channel flipping. Bulls fans, just tough luck with the scheduling, having a channel flip here, both first and the second round of the NCAA tournament, with the men and the women playing at the same time yet again. And hey, the Bandits won again last night. They're really good. They're 12-3. They're in first place. They've clinched a playoff berth. They're going back to the playoffs for the first time since 2016. Good stuff there. A hard-fought win against Toronto last night. They were down 4-0 coming into the first quarter. Then they went on a six-goal run to go up 6-4 and held on to win 8-6. They're not back at home until April 20th, unfortunately, for their final regular season game of the year, but it's looking pretty good, like there'll be at least one home playoff game coming up in the month of May here in Banditland. So excited about that. And as always, proud to be part of that broadcast team on ESPN 1520. Bandits in action next, the first weekend of April, Friday, April 5th at Toronto. Let's go to the Wester Hotline and bring in, though, he is the newest winner of the Daytona 200 in Superbike racing. He's out of Rochester, New York. His name is Kyle Wyman, and we learned about him last week on the program thanks to a caller. And Kyle, I will admit I don't follow motorcycle racing, but I was super excited to hear about your win at Daytona. Congratulations.
Thank you. Great to be on, and cool to hear somebody's shouting it out to you.
Yeah, I got to thank Chris who called in to bring it to our attention, and then I reached out to you, and I went back and watched the race there on Fans Choice and watched that four-lap dash to the finish, and my goodness, Kyle, that was, I'm sure it was really exciting from where you were from on the bike, but just watching it on the internet there, that 5-6 bike battle for the lead there through those last four laps, just kind of take us through what it was like those last four laps racing for the win.
Yeah, well, it's Daytona is always unique because you have so much draft, you have a lot of drafting that's going on, and throughout that 200-mile race, I had to really plan my strategy out, for what ended up being a four-lap sprint. You turn an endurance race into a sprint race pretty quick when you just put everybody back on the front row. So my only chance was to kind of try to get away, and we were able to do it, so worked out.
And that last red flag, was that kind of, that really helped you out? Because I was listening to your post-race comments there on the broadcast, and you were kind of in safe fuel mode right before then. So that red flag kind of saved you with your fuel mileage there at the end of the race?
Yeah, you know, I had a 5-second lead in the middle of the race before our second pit stop, and I ran out of fuel on the in lap, and it turns out that the first pit stop they didn't get our fuel tank all the way full, but I didn't know that. You know, we don't have radio communication or anything, so I just was trying to conserve fuel to salvage a third place, and that's where I was kind of, and then you know, 5-4 laps to go, that red flag came out and reshuffled everything, put us all back on even terms. So pretty much 180 miles of the 200 race didn't really mean too much until, you know, except for there was only six of us on the lead lap. Only six of us could actually win it in that sprint.
But all six of you were, like, right there at least. I mean, it maybe went down to 5 or 4 bikes by the end, but it was at least the top four. You guys traded the lead back and forth there a lot there during those last four laps. It was thrilling.
Yeah, quite a bit. You know, Daytona just provides that kind of racing. You know, you get a pack of bikes like that. The draft is huge, you know, so even if you have a gap, you know, coming out onto that, you know, NASCAR 3 and 4, after you come out of the infield, you know, you get swallowed up pretty quick. So you've got to have a really good gap to be able to break that draft.
One of the, maybe the race-winning pass, I think I remember, if I remember this correctly, but I think your race-winning pass, you actually passed the bike ahead of you going into the bus stop or the chicane, whatever you want to call that, on the backstretch of the oval there. Is that a typical place to pass where you made that pass, or was that maybe you caught the guy by surprise passing him, entering that chicane on the backstretch?
That was me just trying to make sure I was in the top three. You know, I had to be in the top three, and that's a pretty typical space just because it's so wide of a racetrack. And then I kind of got passed in the tri-oval and passed back for the lead going into the infield. I knew I wanted to lead into the infield because that's where I was the strongest. I didn't want to get held up. So, those are the two biggest passing zones, turn one and the bus stop.
Kyle Wyman joining us here at WGR's Fast Track. Okay, Kyle, I have to now ask some ignorant, dumb fan questions because I don't follow motorcycle racing, so I've got to ask these kind of easy questions, but I'm just curious, and I'm sure people at home listening are curious. Racing at Daytona, first off, what are the top speeds you are reaching there, especially around the oval parts of the facility?
So we've heard a couple guys were in the high 180s, up to 188 in the tri-oval, and you don't really get that on your own. You only get that in that draft, like we talked about. But with the pack racing, yeah, big top speeds.
My God, on two wheels. I'm sure it doesn't seem like, I'm sure you're used to it, but just to hear you say that, 180 miles an hour on two wheels. And then my other dumb fan question is, racing on the banking there, I mean, it looks crazy with four wheels and stock cars and sports cars, but what is it like being on two wheels there at the top of the banking in the corners?
Well, it's definitely different because you're actually leaned over also. So, you know, you got 31 degrees of banking and then you're leaned over at maybe, you know, I don't know, another 30. So, you know, you're it's almost like you're perpendicular to the ground.
Yeah.
And you're trying to look up and you're looking up and it's almost like, feels like you're in a loop.
Yeah.
It might sound weird, but you can't see the end of the banking when you enter into it. So you're looking up, and the G-forces make it feel like you're straight up and down. So it just feels like you're in a roller coaster loop.
Yeah, that was another, just from watching it, just the sight. Yeah, literally, like you said, you're almost perpendicular to the apron there of the banking when you get up at the top. Again, that was another sight that just kind of blew me away. So, Kyle, of course,
that you probably noticed is we go straight to the top of the banking, and then we come down. Right? And that's kind of a line that we used. We used the hill of the banking, the downhill of the banking as we exit it as part of our drive down that straightaway.
All right, yeah.
Kind of an interesting bike line.
Does that, it just help set you up for the next part of the course better?
Yep.
So, Kyle, again, you've reached, you know, the kind of the pinnacle of superbike racing with this Daytona 200 win, but let's go back to how it all began. You're from Rochester, the Macedon area. How did you get involved in motorcycle racing, and how long have you been doing this for?
Yeah, so my family's Harv's Harley Davidson out in Macedon, New York. So
okay.
Harley Davidson dealership. And just grew up riding dirt bikes. And then, you know, we started getting into local flat track racing. So my first race was at the Crusaders Motorcycle Club in Albion, not too far down the road.
Mm.
And that was kind of my local, you know, stomping grounds. You know, Albion was that whole area. It's kind of a hotbed of motorcycle racers that have come out of there that are racing pro flat track and road racing. But just went through the amateur ranks of flat track, turned pro in flat track. So, you know, all dirt racing until I was about 18, 19 years old, I switched over to road racing. And it's a pretty natural transition for a lot of guys.
On dirt, was it flat? You flat track? Did you do any kind of like a motocross too, or were you strictly flat track when you were on dirt?
Nope. All flat track. Just mostly oval horse tracks. You know, up in Canada, we'd go into Ontario and race a lot of stuff there. We'd race in Ohio quite a bit, and just kept it kind of northeast. Even when we did the pro stuff and the flat track, we didn't do the whole national series. We were kind of just doing regional stuff.
Mm-hmm. And now you're in, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're in the Moto America series now, which is kind of like the top national series for this?
Yeah, so it's kind of confusing with the 200. The Daytona used to be part of the whole national series with AMA Superbike, but now it's just like a one-off separate race. And it doesn't count for points or anything else. So the Moto America series is now the national series, and that first race is in 2 weeks at Road Atlanta. So
okay.
This Daytona race was kind of my preseason, and that was on a 600cc machine, which is that class for the 200, just 600s. And I race Superbike, which is 1,000cc machines in Moto America.
All right, and yeah, you guys go to a bunch of very familiar road course facilities. You said Road Atlanta. Then you go to COTA after that, where IndyCar is today, Road America, Laguna Seca, Sonoma, you know, all facilities any race fan is familiar of. I got to ask another, I guess, dumb fan question, but all these road courses, what is the road racing on motorcycles at Watkins Glen? Is that ever a potential? I'm sure you'd love to have a nice home race like that. Is that ever a possibility, you think, someday to maybe go to Watkins Glen with this series?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately not. I mean, the Armco and the walls are right on the edge of the racetrack. I mean, even a lot of the car drivers are like, no way, we don't want to race there, you know? It's unfortunate because, it's right down the road. It's such a beautiful area. It's such a cool layout, but no, it's just not going to work for us. You know, we need all that runoff.
Gotcha.
We need an air fence and stuff like that, and it's just never going to get homologated.
Understandable. I had to ask these ignorant fan questions for someone not familiar with the superbike racing. But Kyle, again, I wish I would have known about your successes sooner. I was glad that our caller Chris brought this to our attention, and it was a thrilling finish. Congratulations, and thank you for the time this morning. Best of luck this season on the Moto America series.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. Kyle Wyman, again, winner of the Daytona 200 for Superbike Racing. You can find him on Twitter. He's at Kyle Wyman. And again, MotoAmerica.com for more information about the series he's going to compete in this year. And also KyleWymanRacing.com is his website. And I love it. You know, we always try and get local drivers that have success on a major national level whenever we can. So if you have other stories like this, you know, feel free, tweet me, Facebook message us, email me, dbuchanan@wgr550.com. If you guys have anything else like this, I know we focus kind of on NASCAR and some of the local short track stuff, but I'm open to covering any form of motorsports, especially when local drivers are having great success like Kyle has. And so I love to feature them on the program. So if you got any more stories like that at home you want to share us, please feel free to bring it to my attention. Again, thank you to our caller last week that brought us Kyle to our attention. I'm glad we could get him on the show here quickly to talk about that. All right, we get back. We will wrap up today's edition of Fast Track. Time for your phone calls at 803-0551, 888-552-550. What about it, motorcycle fans? Are any of you out there listening this morning? Love to hear if you're a fan of superbike racing. I know motocross it was on NBC Sports Network last night. I know that's pretty big, but you know, I have a neighbor, actually. He's a huge fan of Superbike racing. If anybody else out there, if you were happy to hear from Kyle and knew about his success, again, feel free to call in here, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We get back here to wrap up Fast Track on WGR.
Hi, this is Brad Keselowski, driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford. You're listening to WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Something about Brad, the way he said WGR there made me laugh. I don't know. Just kind of sounded weird coming out of Brad Keselowski there. 11:52 here on WGR's Fast Track. We don't have a lot of time as we got to get out for NCAA tournament coverage. They'll have whip-around coverage here coming up at the top of the hour. And then again, UB men on 15:20, and the women are on 1400 and 103.7 FM today for UB Bulls. Go Horns, or Horns Up, excuse me. Horns Up for the Bulls this evening for the men and the women. Mentioned earlier, there was some qualifying or inspection issues at Martinsville this morning as teams went through pre-race inspection. William Byron and then also DJ Kennington and Jeb Burton all had their times thrown out after failing inspection today, so they'll all fall to the rear of the field for today's race. They'll roll off 34th, 35th, and 36th, respectively. Again, Joey Logano, Eric Almirola on the front row. The trucks were in action yesterday. Always loved the trucks at Martinsville. And Kyle Busch, he beat up on the field, led 174 laps out of 250 and picked up the win there yesterday. Stuart Friesen started on the pole, led 18 laps, but unfortunately finished fifth. I think they might have missed on the strategy a little bit with the pit stops, but still another top five for Stuart. And hey, look, Stuart Friesen is leading the Truck Series points for just four races in, I know, but still pretty impressive. Stuart and the Hallmar Racing team and Tripp Bruce leading the Truck Series point standings after four races here in 2019. He's got three top tens, two top fives, and is on top of the standings. That's pretty cool. Grant Enfinger is second, 4 points back of Stewart. Brett Moffitt, Johnny Sauter, Harrison Burton round out the top five. Ben Rose, Austin Hill, Matt Crafton, Todd Gilland, and Sheldon Creed. Your top 10 in Truck Series points after the first four races. Still, despite not winning yet this year, but he's been very close. They highlighted 4 second-place finishes so far in his career. Still looking for that first Truck Series win for Stuart Friesen. I think it's going to come this year, and when it does, I'm still if it's not at Eldora, I think it's going to be in a mile-and-a-half track because their mile-and-a-half package has just been phenomenal. He always seems to run really well at those tracks, and I think that's three out of his 4 second-place finishes, I think, maybe even come at mile-and-a-half tracks, just going off the top of my head. I think one of those second-place finishes was at Eldora, but he's also had a couple runner-ups finishes at mile-and-a-half. But Stuart Friesen leading the Truck Series points and won the pole for the race at Martinsville yesterday. Just great to see. He is off. He was supposed to be racing today in Pennsylvania with the Dirt Modified. I actually haven't looked to see if that race was still on for today or canceled due to weather, but he had a doubleheader for this weekend and actually picked up a win, I think it was last weekend, over in Delaware, Georgetown Speedway in the Dirt Modified, as he keeps himself pretty busy when not in the truck, running with the Hallmar team on the dirt. And all that dirt action and pavement action will start making its way closer to Western New York as we get closer to local racing season here. That'll do it. We're out of time. I'm late, actually. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next Sunday at 11 with another edition of Fast Track here on WGR.